This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 6th at 10:55 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like journalists will start complaining about trolls on Threads, just like we complain about them on Twitter.
Just what we need, another social media platform for trolls.
This one will be troll-free, Mike, I promise.
Okay.
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters or political trolls who are desperate for your vote. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, our Snollygoster of the Week award goes to a new platform for possible trolls.
Goes to the person who created those threads. But first, the Ohio Secretary of State's office and county boards of elections will have a lot of signatures to examine, nearly a million of them.
First up, the signatures to put an abortion rights amendment on the November ballot.
Ohioans know what's best for them and their families, and we are standing up for that with over 700,000 signatures that agree with us today.
That is Kelly Copeland with the group Pro-Choice Ohio speaking Wednesday as a coalition of abortion rights groups turned in signatures in their effort to make the November ballot. They need about 414,000 of those signatures to be verified if they want their abortion rights issue to go before voters in the fall.
Now, abortion rights opponents, they basically shrugged off the number of signatures that were collected. Mike Gunadakis heads Ohio Right to Life.
The rule of thumb is you turn in at least double in order for the Secretary of State to find enough ballots. So it was a very underwhelming day for them.
Mike Gunadakis has been known to stretch the truth at times, you might say.
Yeah.
But I think he's spot on there. It is, experts do say you should have about double, and they are less than double, so far from a sure thing.
Yeah, that is the rule of thumb. You need double the number required. But the thing that you have to watch for is how these were collected. How organized were they during the collection process? Now, I have to think they think they have the 414,000 they need to get on the ballot. Because if they don't, and they want to get on the ballot in 2024, they've got to start all over again. Mm-hmm. Once you file the signatures, you can't get them back. So this is a big risk if they think they're going to be close even, that they've used all this money to collect these signatures to get on the ballot this November. My guess is they are pretty confident that they have the proper number of valid signatures there. Now, as they're collecting them, they've apparently been going through them, making sure that you can read the handwriting, making sure they are registered voters, making sure that the voter hasn't signed twice. And now, if that has been going on during the collection process, you don't need double. So we'll see.
They better be confident. I mean, because this is a major bet they're making, and they waited until the last day. They waited until the deadline, which might be strategic, right? I mean, why turn in your work earlier than you're required? But, you know, you could look at it the other way, that they did not do it earlier and they were right up against the deadline. And so they were not terribly confident, or at least maybe they were being careful. I don't know. But I'm with Gunadakis here. I'm not certain. You know, a couple podcasts ago, I told you I would be shocked if they did not make the November ballot. Looking at the 710 or whatever it might be, I forget the exact number, but it's just above 700,000. I will not be shocked anymore if they fall just short.
No, if they committed double, you'd say, okay, they've got it. Now, there is some question, and don't forget, they need the total number, which is 414,000 in Ohio, which is 10% of the total vote cast in last November's election for governor. But they also have to collect a certain number from 44 of Ohio's counties, half of Ohio's counties. In each of those counties, they need a number of valid signatures that matches 5% of the vote that turned out in the governor's race. So it's more than just the total number. They've got to make sure that they've got a representative sample from across Ohio. Not every county, but
well, they did get they did turn in signatures from every county.
Yes.
They had them from all 88. I don't know if they met the 5% threshold, but
probably not, because that's a big hurdle. That's what the August 8th election will require if it passes, is you will need to get 5% from every Ohio county, and that's a big lift.
And again, if the August election going forward, if these new limits do pass, the abortion issue, is it subject to all of these? I mean, is it retroactively subject to these?
Not the once they would be on if issue one, which would require first and foremost, a 60% majority.
It would be subject to that.
It would be subject to that, but they would not have to go back out and collect signatures because the law is not in effect right now. They're operating under current state law.
Right.
They've met the deadline to get on the November ballot if the signatures are valid. So they can't make them go back out and get more. The 60% threshold
right.
would apply, though. Now, I also think there could be court challenges there. Because they're changing the requirement in the middle of a campaign. And you could argue that this campaign should be exempt from the change in state law because
sure,
it wasn't enacted when they started.
Right, they should be grandfathered in.
So
you can make that argument.
If the issue one passes, there could be a legal challenge to it for this amendment. I don't know if it would pass. The Ohio Supreme Court would be the judge.
Right. Good luck with that, Democrats.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are starting to see this campaign develop, the November campaign develop. This will be the only abortion measure on the ballot in the country. And so there will be a lot of attention and there would be a lot of money coming in anyway, but there'll be a lot more national money coming in probably now because, again, the eyes of the both sides of the abortion issue in the country will be on Ohio in November.
Yeah, I've heard rumors that national news outlets are already setting up bureaus here in Ohio to cover this race through the late summer and fall, if it gets on the ballot, and if regardless of whether issue one passes or not, they'll be covering this issue. We're starting to see the language that they're using. Now, the supporters of abortion rights, they always tend to avoid the word abortion. They like terms like reproductive care, reproductive rights. They argue that Ohioans should be able to control their own bodies and medical care. So no real surprises there. That's kind of the language they've always used.
Yeah, and likewise, the other side is not really using the word abortion. They're focusing on parental rights. They're trying to frame this as an anti-parent amendment because they argue the amendment would allow minors to get an abortion or to get gender-affirming care without parental consent.
Yeah, so they're
even though it does not explicitly say that.
No, but there is an argument that someone could challenge the law and say, I don't need my parents' consent to get one of these procedures, and it would be up to the legislature and the courts to decide. They also call it the dangerous and extreme. Abortion rights opponents say it will allow for late-term abortions. That's not entirely accurate. The amendment would prohibit the state from imposing restrictions up until the point of fetal viability, which is basically 22, 23 weeks of a pregnancy. Exceptions could be made for the health of the mother, and that exception could be a late-term abortion, but they never happen unless it is an extreme circumstance. Doctors just do not do that unless the fetus is no longer viable or there is an extreme danger to the health of the mother.
Again, another issue that Mike Gonadakis with Ohio Right to Life is pretty loose with the truth on. He tries to frame this as a license for late-term abortions, just like Ohio's going to become one giant abortion mill.
Yeah, he's technically accurate, but it's a way to confuse folks who are in the middle and also to rally abortion rights opponents.
Yeah, it's disingenuous. It doesn't happen the way he's trying to frame it as that. Anyway, moving on now to another issue that could be on the ballot. We're not entirely sure yet, but Ohioans could be voting on whether to legalize marijuana, not just for medicine, Mike, but for fun.
For fun. Supporters of recreational marijuana also submitted petition signatures Wednesday in their effort to make the November ballot. Tom Herron with the Coalition to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol says their proposal is good policy.
We expect to pass with such a wide margin of victory in November that it will be a political mandate from Ohio voters, which, in addition to the merits, will make it very politically unfeasible to take any action to repeal it after we pass.
And he's talking about efforts to repeal it because it would only be an initiated statute, not an amendment, but an initiated statute. If approved, it would legalize the growth, sale, and smoking of pot by people 21 and older and would also create a 10% sales tax on it.
Yeah, they submitted 222,000 signatures. They needed 124,000 for them to get on the ballot, valid signatures, that is. So they're pretty close to getting double. They're close to that. They're closer to that two times number. As you said, Steve, this is not an amendment. So lawmakers, in theory, could make marijuana for fun illegal the day after voters approve this. But if it passes by a decent majority, most believe that they would not do that.
Yeah, polls say that a pretty good majority of Ohioans think marijuana should be legalized for recreational use. But We can also look to another very conservative state, Oklahoma, last year, recreational pot amendment there. I think it was an amendment. It was certainly a ballot issue. It failed by 20%.
Yeah.
It got whipped at the polls.
Yeah, there's been several very conservative states that have rejected this. So this is not a slam dunk. It's an odd year election. Turnout will be low. I think this passes fairly easily in a presidential election year when a lot of Democrats would turn out. This will have not have the same turnout.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see if they get on the ballot. It looks like they will get on the ballot. They're double the amount of signatures. So conventional wisdom says they're probably going to get the number that they need. And 124,000 isn't a huge number.
Yeah, and we don't have an apples-to-apples comparison. The only other recreational marijuana amendment that went before voters was the Responsible Ohio issue. I believe that was 2015, but I can't remember exactly.
Buddy, remember Buddy?
I do remember the mascot Buddy, the giant marijuana bud. I wonder whenever that mascot is. But that would have created a monopoly of just a few companies that would have been allowed to run the marijuana business in Ohio. And Ohioans, I would say, smartly rejected that.
This is a pretty simple, straightforward initiated statute. Regulate marijuana like you do alcohol. You're over 21, you can grow it, you can buy it, you can use it. If you're under 21, you cannot. It'll be taxed at a certain rate. For the first couple of years, the folks who are selling the medical marijuana would have first dibs on selling the recreational marijuana, and after that, it opens up. So it seems to be a regulated but fair playing field. It's pretty straightforward.
And the tax money would go to a variety of different places, including mental health and addiction recovery services. It would go to law enforcement agencies in the municipalities where these dispensaries are located. And so it would not be just a regular 10% sales tax.
So does that mean that the police unions are for legalizing marijuana for fun?
You know, I'm not.
I'm just curious how that plays out.
And I'm being totally serious here when I say that I'm not sure they are against recreational marijuana. I remember I was once interviewing the police chief in Marion, Ohio, and they have a very bad opioid problem there. And I asked him how much money they spent enforcing marijuana laws. And he said, $0. If they find it, they find it. And so I don't think police, I mean, they take it now just for the PR pictures, you know, the table full of marijuana baggies that they say is worth $1 billion or whatever. I don't think they really spend much time enforcing the laws.
No, I think let's face it, they are so overwhelmed with fentanyl and heroin and opioids.
Methamphetamine,
which are far, far, far more deadly than marijuana ever was. So you can see if you only have so many police officers on the street, mm-hmm. where you're going to focus your efforts. And
right.
Yeah, it'll be, usually these odd year elections are very quiet. You have city council, a mayor's race. Once in a while, there'll be a levy or interesting, you know, income tax issue on the ballot. But this is going to be, both of these will be expensive campaigns. There'll be a lot of TV ads. The abortion rights folks said $30 million they're expecting to need and will spend if they get on the ballot.
Sure. I'm not surprised. So we've talked a lot about how this is different. It's an initiated statute versus an amendment. The timeline, though, is the same for both. Local officials have until July 20th to inspect and verify the signatures. The Ohio Secretary of State, Franklin Rose, then must rule by July 25th whether the petitioners have collected enough valid signatures.
And if they don't, they have that so-called cure period. Supporters will have 10 days to collect and file additional signatures to try to meet that minimum standard. They cannot collect signatures right now. They cannot collect signatures between now and then, mm-hmm. just to have as an insurance policy. They have to wait until the Secretary of State rules, and if they are short, they will then have 10 days to try to make up the difference.
And that cure period would also go away under the issue going before voters on August 8th.
Yes.
But it would not affect this.
Yes. It is just so, there's so many balls in the air.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to cover this right now.
Well, you imagine a voter who's not paying attention. I think people who are listening to this podcast, they know this.
They're politicos. Yes.
They understand how this works. But somebody who is right now on the beach in North Carolina for 2 weeks, going to come back mid-July, early voting has begun, not really paying attention. Are they going to care about this? Probably not.
They probably care, but they just might not know.
Yeah.
In retrospect, be like, oh, I should have voted on that.
Yeah. Maybe the ads, those big scissors will be back and they'll get people out to vote.
The Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast is with you to talk through what you're watching, listening to, and reading. What you need to check out this weekend, what you can skip next, it's all fair game. For pop culture in high spirits, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
Anyway, turning now to our Snollygoster of the Week, which we give out to the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. And this week it goes to the shrewdest internet troll and who we think is really doing something snollygostery here, and that is Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, he's taking on Twitter head on. They have Meta, his company that controls Facebook and Instagram, and I think WhatsApp, right? That's the international thing. They have introduced Threads. It is very similar to Twitter. It looks identical to Twitter, and he is taking on Twitter head on. Twitter's had its issues.
It certainly has.
Elon Musk has bought it. He's antagonized a lot of users. He's capped the amount of posts you can see. He has picked fights with places like NPR and PBS and the BBC and whomever else. And so Zuckerberg sees an opening, and they kept it under wraps, and then they had unveiled it this week, and just in time for the ramp up to the 2024 election. The question is, will Donald Trump have a thread? Is it a thread account?
I bet they will just call it a thread. Hey, do you have a thread?
What's the verb going to be? Because when you post on Twitter, you tweet. When you post on Thread, what are you doing? Are you threading?
You throwed? I don't know. I don't know. I guess Elon Musk could get even by deleting his Instagram account.
I think he did that already.
I think he vowed to do it. I guess I should check if he has done it. But
You don't follow him on Instagram?
I don't follow anyone on Instagram. I created an Instagram account to follow WOSU Public Media. That is the only person I follow, the only entity I follow on Instagram.
Well, when Twitter first came on board, this is years and years ago, I said, I shan't Twitter. Then I broke down, and I was on Twitter for a while, and I'm back to I shan't Twitter. I'm right now, I shan't Thread. I don't need any more trolls in my life.
I don't either. I don't see myself using Thread, but maybe it'll catch on. I bet.
If it's better than Twitter, maybe I'll give it a shot.
Remember the old, have you seen the old late 80s, early 90s video with Katie Couric and Bryant Gumbel where they're talking about the internet? And I bet that's how this is going to sound in like 5 years.
Yeah.
We're just going to sound like just crazy old men.
Everyone's going to be on Thread. It'd be the best thing ever.
Wagging our cane at the microphone. Anyway, that will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts. And please just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, and our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.